Well, Australia's defence leaders are working through the consequences of suspended military cooperation with Indonesia. The decision was taken by Indonesia's defence chief after an officer complained about insulting training posters at the SAS headquarters in Perth. That was in November. On AM this morning, Australia's defence minister, Maurice Payne, confirmed the concerns were raised with her.
So we did take, and we do take, the concerns that were raised by the TNI member seriously. We have been communicating with our counterparts at the appropriate level to manage this process.
The story does not end there, though. There are reports this morning that Indonesia's Defence Minister, Riamazad Riasudu, has reprimanded officers over the affair. He says military officials had not consulted him about the suspension. Watching these developments closely is Associate Professor Greg Filley, Professor of Indonesian Politics at the ANU. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Hamish.
I know you didn't have an opportunity to listen to Maurice Payne's interview on AM this morning, but she did indicate that she had learned about this back in November when it was raised, but had not been in direct contact with her Indonesian counterpart, the Defence Minister, until this past week or so. Is that surprising to you?
Well, I think several things are surprising about this. The first is the admission by the Indonesian Defence Minister, who seems quite well disposed to Australia, that he didn't know the details of this suspension of military training, and he expressed a desire to talk to his Australian counterpart, Maurice Payne, as soon as he could. And so one would have thought a decision of this magnitude would be something not just made by the commander of the defence forces in Indonesia, but also by the defence minister, if not something that goes all the way to cabinet. So that process in itself is a rather curious one, and that probably is an indication of the high level of authority and autonomy, indeed, that General Gatot Namuntio, the head of the armed forces, has in Indonesia at the present time.
So in your view, is this less about the relationship between Australia and Indonesia and more about the relationship between the civilian administrative government of Indonesia and the TNI?
No, I wouldn't go that far. I think there seems to have been something that caused genuine offence to at least one Indonesian officer on that training program in the SAS base in Perth, and perhaps to other officers as well, but only one officer has been mentioned. And it's still not entirely clear what the nature of those offensive incidents or documents were. There are various reports circulating in both the Indonesian and the Australian media. But if some of those reports are halfway accurate, well, then these things could be expected to cause problems, and you would expect that they would be very promptly dealt with by the Australians. So I think there was something that triggered this incident, but what has perhaps made it a bigger issue has been the way in which it has brought to light some of the statements that the head of the Indonesian Armed Forces has been making in public, not only about Australia, but about a lot of other Western countries and indeed about China. And they indicate that he has a very wary attitude towards a lot of large neighbours.
Mm. I do want to ask you more about that, but just on the Indonesian piece of this, since Reformasi, the Indonesian government has done a lot of work to reduce the autonomy that the TNI has, the Indonesian military has. At various times during SBY's leadership, there were positive signs about that sort of progress. What's your view on where that is at, given what we know now about this decision effectively being made autonomously by the military leadership without the knowledge of the political leadership?
I think it was certainly true that during the 10 years of Susilo Bambang Yudhoyono's presidency, that there was quite substantial civilian control over the military, and that SBY went to a lot of trouble to ensure that that remained the case. Particularly in the way in which he managed the rotation of senior military officers. During the presidency, the last 2 and a bit years of Jokowi's presidency, we've seen the military allowed a much greater role in society. To some extent, you could say that they have emerged from the barracks to a much greater degree than they have been able to do for the last 10 or 15 years. They're involved in quite a lot of programs within society. They're back doing development work in villages. They're helping to staff prisons. They're doing ideologisation campaigns. The head of the armed forces, General Gatot Numantio, is one of the people who leads those programs. So they're involved in counter-terrorism campaigns. So a lot of these things were resisted by Jokowi's predecessor, but Jokowi seems quite happy to allow them. It's not to say that the military is without civilian control, but I think TNI, the Indonesian military, and its current commander have a lot more room to move than what they have had in the last decade or more.
On the materials, as they're being described, that caused the offence at the barracks in Western Australia, I've had it confirmed from two separate sources that there was this Panchagila reference, at least that was what has been raised as a concern. Can you just help us understand why that's significant? Panchasila, the five foundational philosophies of Indonesian democracy, developed, of course, by Sukarno. Why is this so significant that Panchagila was written?
So this is a kind of a crude, almost undergraduate play on words. So Panchasila, for Indonesian military officers and for strongly nationalistic Indonesians, Panchasila is not just a national ideology. And it's an ideology, by the way, that has transcended both democratic periods and authoritarian periods in Indonesian history. But for military officers, it's almost a sacred document. And so any ridiculing of that or anything that could be perceived as ridiculing that, such as saying Panchagila, or in other words, punch a mad person or a crazy punch, anything like that would be seen as very insulting. And it would be really surprising in a circumstance such as the SAS base, and the SAS have long had close relations with their counterpart in the Indonesian military, Kopassus, and I think those relations have been highly valued on both sides. It would be really surprising in an SAS base if something like this was written, because you would imagine that the people there, the Australian people taking part in training, would be sensitive to this issue. Doesn't mean to say it didn't happen, but I'm sure the SAS leadership would be regarding this as very sensitive. One other thing I should mention is that the Indonesian Defence Minister said last night that an Australian lieutenant had been sanctioned by his commanders about this, and the Indonesian Defence Minister seemed to think that this was fine. The Indonesian Defence Minister, I should also add, is a former three-star general himself.
Just on that term, Panchagila, in researching it overnight on some of the Indonesian websites, it doesn't seem to be an entirely new term. I mean, it is used occasionally as a political slogan. I noticed a lot of people campaigning against government corruption in Indonesia use it from time to time. Is it the fact that it's Australians using the term on a military base?
Probably so. Some of this indeed could come back to a combination of factors. You could have had a very strongly nationalistic, trenchantly nationalistic Indonesian officer, who took umbrage at this and who made the complaint, and then the complaint has come before the Indonesian Armed Forces commander, who is of similar unsympathetic views towards Australia, and so the combination of those factors has suddenly set off a chain reaction that's led to quite a big decision such as this. I think with a different kind of TNI leadership, with the previous commander of the Indonesian Armed Forces, I suspect we would not have had a response like this. But General Gatot has been well known for these kinds of very ultra-nationalistic remarks, at times very hostile remarks about some of Indonesia's larger neighbours. And he was making these remarks when he was the head of the army, well before he was appointed as commander of the armed forces by Jokowi. So this would not come as a surprise to any close observer of Indonesian politics.
General Gatot Nurmantio is on the record as saying that he hasn't sent any further soldier, or of his top soldiers anyway, to Australia for training, that he was concerned about them being recruited by Australia. Maurice Payne has dismissed that, but there must be, on occasion, attempts made, if not to recruit people, at least build pretty strong relationships with some of these Indonesian soldiers.
Yes, well, I think Gatot Nurmantio's view represents a hopefully minority view among senior military officers in Indonesia, but nonetheless, it is a view that one occasionally finds, that foreign countries are offering training programs to Indonesian officers in order to undermine their nationalism or to try and influence their thinking in a way which is not in accord with Indonesia's national interests.
Can you explain that a little further? Because having met quite a few Indonesian military leaders reporting there over the years, you will occasionally find some pretty strong views about Australia, some views that some might describe as xenophobic. How common is that amongst senior ranks of the Indonesian military? And it always sort of comes up in the context of conversations about East Timor.
Yeah, so I think my information, like yours, Hamish, is largely anecdotal. I certainly meet quite a few Indonesian military officers in the space of any year, and I suppose as with any military, you'll find a range of views there. There are some officers who are very well disposed to Australia, who are very grateful for any training that they may have received here, and people who don't have a preset view about what Australia's intentions are. But there are also a number of officers who have deeply seated suspicions towards not just Australia, but other major countries who have a lot of dealings with Indonesia. And they believe that those countries have an inherently predatory attitude towards Indonesia. They're trying to make Indonesia weaker so that they can extract greater benefit, can manipulate Indonesia for their own purposes. So in the case of General Gatot Nurmantio, he has published a book called The Proxy War, and in that book he mentions in some detail large countries that he believes are manipulating Indonesians to undermine the country, to create low morality in the country and to lessen the resistance to the intentions of those countries. So the country that most prominently features in Gatot's proxy war discourses at the moment is China. And he's saying things about China that are making life extremely difficult for President Jokowi, and one might also add for the Jakarta governor, who's a Chinese Christian. And Gatot is quite open about not only saying these things before the media, but going before groups of students and senior public servants and military officers and repeating these things in a very unrestrained way. So it's quite unusual for an Indonesian, such a senior military leader, to be saying these things so openly.
Greg Feely, we'll have to leave it there. Appreciate your time this morning.
My pleasure, Hamish.
Associate Professor Greg Feely, a professor of Indonesian politics at the ANU's Bell School of Asia-Pacific Affairs. It's 10 minutes to 8:00.